You're listening to EPN, the e-podcast network.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, your EPN channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who are having great success. Today, we're speaking with Anna Rose Valenci, best-selling author of Where is Home? How a Childhood in East Germany During World War II Shaped My Adult Life. Her book is a number one international bestseller in four biography memoir categories. Anna Rose, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine.
I must say, looking forward to hearing from you today, and thanks for your time. So tell us, for starters, what was life like as a young child before the war and then after the Russians invaded?
Well, before the war, I was little. I was six when the war sort of made us aware of that there was something wrong. And I didn't understand this, of course. I was 6 years old, and I only know something was different and scary. And mother didn't have really the chance to talk much about, because she was too busy taking care of us and watching what's going on, what's developing. So, you know, what can you do? So you just struggle and scare it. That's it.
Yeah, for sure. And I couldn't even imagine being in that situation. Now, when did you become aware of Heil Hitler?
Well, as I said before, I just started. No, I haven't said that. I started first grade in September, first grade, and I was just six. And when we went to school, then one day some of the Russians came into our schoolhouse, and they pushed us all to the back of the room, and were talking. Of course, I personally didn't know what they were talking. Only I found out what there was something wrong when they pushed us in the back. And then told us we had to lift our arm and say Heil Hitler. And this was really scary, seeing every one of our students standing there with their arms high. And then they said, well, this is now Hitler's time, and you have to be quiet. You lift your arm and say Heil Hitler. Our Führer want us to do this from now on. Everybody, when you meet somebody, when you go into a room or you meet someone in the street, you lift your arm and say, Heil Hitler. Otherwise, the Führer, he can have us sent to prison, because that's what he wants now, and that's what we have to do.
That is unbelievable. It really is. Tell us, what was life like under Russian rule?
Well, that's what it was, number one, to start with. And I didn't even want to go out anymore. I was afraid, even going out to get some milk for mother or whatever. And everything else was, there was food in shortage. There were, everything was going wrong. And nobody knew what to go and buy, because there was no food in the stores. And because the Russians, they also wanted everybody just to do what they want to do, what they want them to do. And it was not very nice. And we couldn't get any food. Then we couldn't get any supplies. We couldn't get anything. And then shortly after, they told us that we just have to listen now to what they say, because that's all that was going to be important. So everything was getting topsy-turvy, you know.
I bet, and that is certainly an understatement. Today we're joined by Anna Rose Valenci, best-selling author of Where is Home? How a Childhood in East Germany During World War II Shaped My Adult Life. Her book is a number one international bestseller in four biography memoir categories, and she's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, working in conjunction with the Author Channel, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, continuing on, Anna Rose, you were evacuated to West Germany. Tell us about that.
Well, that didn't go so fast. We were told to, we had to take what we can take. It was January, also 45, and we were going to be transported to a safety area, because now the Poles and the Russians were coming and taking over our area, but they wanted us to be safe and didn't want us to come and then have the bombs fall on us or whatever. So we were pushed out of our little community. Well, actually, it wasn't that little. It's just that it seemed little in retrospect. So we were there, pushed around in trains, in the cars and everything they could find. We were taken out early at 6 in the morning, early in the morning, end of January 1945. It was freezing cold. We didn't know what to do. Mother, she had to pack whatever she could pack for 6 children. Just imagine, or not knowing for how long you will begin to supposedly being safe and when you would come back, so you couldn't plan on anything. And it was really, really, really difficult. We were then as far back as gone till Czechoslovakia, and there because there was no food for anybody, we didn't even have shelter. We had to stay in a school on the floor on straw. That's where they put us. And it was just very strange. It was just, for me, for my brothers, it was an adventure, not for me. I was asked my mother to just watch my two little younger sisters. And she went out, and my brothers, they wanted to see if they get some food or something. The Red Cross couldn't have given us much either. They had just a little milk for the babies, and then like a little soup, or a piece of bread or something like this for the adults and for us children. Of course, we were always hungry. How can you live on this, right, child or not? And my mother, too, and everybody was looking for food. That's all they had to do. And then we were there for quite a while and then shoved to another kind of primitive place to stay till something came through and they're saying, well, now we can do here, go there. But you never knew anything. You were just quiet. I sat there and watching and wondering and scared. What happens if mother's not coming back? Oh, my God. What am I going to do? What my brothers don't come back? Because they were looking for food, too. Oh, my God, then I come to think about it. It was horrible.
And not to take away from anything that you went through, but I'm sure you can really relate to what's going on in Syria and has been going on there. What were the effects after the war?
Well, they said 1945 in May, the war was over, but nothing was over. Everything continued. There was still war going on. It was just, you know, you can reorganize the country or area if there was just shouting and killing the day before and the next day supposed to be the war over and everybody's supposed to be nice and don't kill anybody. This doesn't work, but people keep saying it's over and it didn't work like that. But we were in the meantime also evacuated again, and then the Russians came. Now they were even worse. They were still overran our little community, and I don't know how to say this. It's so difficult to explain. They had, again, they come and took our house away. They put us wherever we could. Then there was a fire, and our small apartment we had gotten in the meantime was burned down too. So food, forget it. Food wasn't existing. And so we, my brothers and I, we were sent out to the fields to go and get some food. So we went to looking for food. We would, for instance, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with those nettles that grow out in the wild. They sting on your hands when you touch them. And so we did this. We picked those, and mother made some kind of a improvised spinach for us and anything. The only thing that was available was potatoes because they grew in the fields. And what the Russians couldn't use for themselves, they let us children then go and pick what we could find. So mother, she was continuously looking and improvising and doing what she could get so that we get something to eat. She pretty much invented food, invented what she can do, what we could find. And but we were always hungry, and there was no sense in saying, Mutti, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. She would say, children, go out with your boys and go see what you can find. And it was horrible when I come to think. But we couldn't look at it, especially I, as horrible. I just looked at it as unbelievable, like a situation that was just something, how life was now, you know, like when you're a child, every day is another day. And when mother says, we do this, you do this. And if you don't, then you have nothing. And this is hard to explain.
And really, no one can even imagine what you went through during that time of your life. And I'm sure it would be hard to explain it all the way you'd like. What prompted you, as we conclude, to move to America? And why did you make America your home?
Yeah, well, this sounds easier than it happened, because first of all, after we were in West Germany in 1946, we were how shall I say, we were deprived of our country. We were pushed out of our German location, and we were dropped off in West Germany. And so we had to find something, an apartment, some place to live. Nobody wanted a family with five children, so we were six children to accommodate. And that was not very easy either for us. So till mother always found something, no matter how primitive, at least what we had to call home, that was it now. And so we, let me see, then, oh yes, we could go back to school. We didn't have then for a year and a half no school. We the German children, the Russians and Poles, yes, but not us, because they took our place, our country. So it was totally very, very difficult. And then after I went back to school, then I went to high school in West Germany. And once I graduated from high school, then I went to my mother. She got me into trying to study more, and she signed me up to study nursing. She was always concerned, children, get something, learn something that's always being needed. So, for instance, nursing was needed, you know. And otherwise, it's very difficult to get a job, to get some work. So here we were. So I finished this. And once I graduated, I was really suddenly, we went to Mannheim in Germany already. We came along really nice. It grew. It was already rebuilding from the war. And it was really amazing what we did as a country. And so I had now my nursing degree, so I said, let me see what I can do. So I went to the North Sea first, and I went in the hospital to work as a nurse. I had now was, you know, graduated, and and I started to like life. I found it beautiful, because now you didn't see any Russians, Poles with guns, with whatever. You didn't have bombs going off. You heard none of this. So life was really getting good now. And so I went to London. I said, okay, London was the closest to Germany. Let me see what I can do. I want to continue more. I want to learn more in the world. I hadn't seen anything, you know, as little as I was. But now in the meantime, I was 18. But I hadn't seen anything, not experienced anything. So I went to, as I said, I was in London. And so I thought, let me see what I can find. And eventually, I met a couple, and she had me help his wife to live in London, because they were from America. And she was in a hospital, and she wanted me then to help her at home a bit, because I was a nurse. So that's what it went. And for me, that was just beautiful. And so I did what I could. And eventually, I found a job with an American couple, and she wanted me to help her still be at home or after hospital. And they were very kind people, and they said, well, stay with me and help me with everything. And I did, and I thought, oh, why not? Who cares where I work? And it was really an amazing, like an eye-opener for me. And the Americans had a different lifestyle. So so I worked for them, and I got the husband, he had an American company, and he had bought then a small plane, and said to me, said, well, if you want to, you can work with my company on the plane. And I went like, oh my God, I'm going to see the world. Ooh. I was so excited, and I worked with them. So they trained me as a flight attendant on a very small plane. And so that's what I did, and I had a time of my life. And after a while, after about 3 years or so, I figured, let's see what I can do now. I have to move on. I cannot just stay where I am. So I went to TWA, and so I told them what I was doing now, and all this, and they gave me some tests and all kind of stuff. And then they hired me to study to be a flight attendant. So here I was, flight attendant, and I got my papers to come to America, and I came I forget now which city we came. I was now one of the trained flight attendant, and I was officially in America. I hadn't planned this. I thought, well, let me just see what happens. And if I don't like it, you know, my attitude was then, I don't just go and stay. So I thought, well, I can always go elsewhere. I was thinking, where can I go after maybe I see enough what I think I've seen and can move on to another country, see what they're doing, what's cook if I like it there. And I just needed to forget the war. I needed to get out of this bad thoughts I had, the scary thoughts. I wanted to be free. I wanted to experience. And I just wanted to, you know, I called it like a bee, you know, in a when a bee is before the bee gets comes out of the cocoon, you know, it's the bee is stuck in that little skin. So I came out and I thought, I am free. I am free. And I was learning and loving and studying and doing. I was like a total new person. And it was just amazing.
Well, I'd say that's quite a journey. And I can't thank you enough for joining us here briefly on Enterprise Radio to share some of that with us here today. And I'm sure listeners want to know where they can pick up the book and get more information on you online. Where is the best place?
Yes, you can go online. My website is AnnaRoseV.com.
And that's easy enough. And we'll leave a link within the show notes of this broadcast. Again, Anna Rose, all the best. Thanks so much for being a part of Enterprise Radio today. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Anna Rose Valenci, best-selling author of Where Is Home? How a Childhood in East Germany During the World War II Shaped My Adult Life. Her book is a number one international bestseller in four biography memoir categories. And for further details, visit AnnaRoseV.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
This is the ePodcast Network.